Earth. And those, you know, we have all of these wonderful algorithms and all these advanced metrics and things to sort of give us an idea and a little bit of, to try to help us predict and understand who may win a series and who may win a game. And all of those are really wonderful. But LeBron, I think I put on Twitter the other day, LeBron has broken math. First time in his career, LeBron is playing a season with no pressure, and it's the most efficient season of his life, I believe.
This is With an Ohio Bias, a podcast for real fans with D and Jake. And ladies and gentlemen, I guess we waited all year, according to every talking head out there, for the trilogy. The Cleveland Cavaliers, once again, take on the Golden State Warriors in the NBA Finals. To help us preview this uber-epic battle is Jared Donnelly from Burning River Basketball. Jared, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, guys. Real quick note, I'm actually moving on from Burning River. I'll be writing for Sam Amico's really wonderful website, amicohoops.net. Should have my first article debut up there, ideally Monday, maybe Tuesday.
And if you don't know who Sam Amico is, he's Akron's own Sam Amico. You can hear him on 92.3 a lot. And, of course, after the Cavs coverage, he does a lot of hits now for Fox Sports Ohio. So you can see almost him everywhere. And that's a great site you have, guys have over there. So
yeah, I'm really excited to get on board there. And Sam's excited. And so we're gonna get after it. And we should have a lot of good content coming out here in the next couple of weeks, with, like you said, with this epic matchup coming.
Yeah, and Jared, just for those people that might not know what your Twitter handle is, I think it's one of the best. I'm sure people in Boston don't like those apples, but share what your Twitter handle is.
That's a great reference. My Twitter handle is Goodball Hunting, so you can follow me, and you know I respond to stuff, and you know we have a discourse. It's at Goodball Hunting on Twitter. I am currently, believe it or not, one of not many Americans or people in the world, I suppose, that do not have a Facebook currently. So I'm kind of throwing the idea of that around, and I'll make sure folks are updated on Twitter at Goodball Hunting how to access me there.
Some people just like to keep it simple, Jared, so that's all right.
Oh, yeah.
All right, and we're talking to Jared Donnelly of AmicoHoops.net. First of all, who do you have as the regular season MVP?
My regular season MVP was LeBron James. I don't understand how anyone could think otherwise. And that's not a Cleveland thing, right? That's not an Ohio bias thing to steal that.
I mean, the podcast
guys
is with an Ohio bias, Jared. It's okay.
Right. Yeah. Right. I didn't want to steal your guys' thunder there, you know. But I just don't understand how you can watch a basketball game and watch him play a basketball game and not feel like it was the MVP. It's completely and utterly insane to me. And we, you know, a bunch of guys at Burning River and I, you know, a month or two ago, we were having this debate, and I asked them simply, if it's game seven and you can pick one player in the league to be on your team to win you game seven, who are you picking? And unanimously, everyone said LeBron. But the interesting thing about that was half of the people on the website wanted to vote for Russell Westbrook. But you just told me if you want to win a game, you're going to take LeBron. How is that? How then is he not more valuable than the other guy? Wins are valuable.
How is he not at least in the top three valuable, at the very least?
Yeah, agreed. Bad. That's insane.
Well, maybe he uses it as that secret motivation like he had last year. Let's hope so anyway.
Be honest, gentlemen. Jake and Jared, 361 days or so, everybody told us this is what it was going to be. I am a Cavs fan like you gentlemen are. I don't take anything for granted. You know, we know the line, everything is earned, not given. So, to see the Cavs win against the Celtics, I was excited. But what can we really learn from that Eastern Conference Finals, especially besides the fact that hopefully that was LeBron's one bad game out of the last 33 he played in the playoffs?
I'm not sure what you can really take from it, right, in terms of big picture stuff. The better team won the series. Like you said, LeBron threw up a clunker. Nobody that game was very good. Everybody was a little bit uneven, but I think the overreaching thing, if you want to try to find some sort of theme for the Cavs, was spurts, the spurt ability. You know, even when Boston did make runs, the Cavs were able to punch back and then retaliate, I guess you could say, with an enormous spurt of their own. And so that was really nice to see, because that was something, you know, frankly, we didn't see a lot during the several months of the regular season, where teams would make a run and sometimes the Cavs would roll over and, you know, kind of get the hell beat out of them a little bit. So it was nice to see them not only be able to make their runs unanswered, but also to answer runs with one of their own.
one of the great threads you have on your Twitter, at Good Ball Hunting, one of the things that you talked about was the metrics that are even available to measure the impact like LeBron James has. And you kind of saw it in that game three performance. If he doesn't show up, or not even show up, if he has a bad game, the impact is not just ripple effects on the Cavs team itself, but the whole game and that series seems to take a whole different turn.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And those, you know, we have all of these wonderful algorithms and all these advanced metrics and things to sort of give us an idea and a little bit of, to try to help us predict and understand who may win a series and who may win a game. And all of those are really wonderful. But LeBron, I think I put on Twitter the other day, LeBron has broken math at this point, because those algorithms and those metrics and those analytics, they're based on, with high and low limits, the maximum amount of time that your best potential lineup can be on the floor together, which is fine. But that doesn't account for the fact that if the Cavs are plus, I'm making this up here, but if the Cavs are plus 20 with Iman Shumpert on the floor, Iman Shumpert might finish the game minus 16 or minus 20, but LeBron's plus 36. So while those are a nice way that we can kind of absorb and sort of make some inferences from those statistics, they don't tell the whole truth, simply because LeBron's greatness is such that any lineup with him on the floor is going to be the best lineup most of the time that either team is able to put on the floor.
Absolutely. Plus, LeBron's always plus 48 or, you know, beyond that if he has to, when we talk about minutes. So that also is something that, you know, isn't fair to other people, you know, or other players when you, you know, try to stack that up.
Absolutely.
The Cavs, I mean, am I crazy? You know, they're throwing around this word adversity a lot. I mean, I think a lot of it's manufactured, in my opinion. I love the Cavs, don't get me wrong, but, I mean, I don't know what this adversity is. If you don't play defense and you don't show effort for, you know, 18 minutes out of the 48 and you go down by 20, you talked about, and shout out to Clark Kellogg, that spurt ability. They did punch back a lot in that series, but, I mean, can they really play the disrespect card besides the fact that they are the defending NBA champions, and maybe that's the thing with Golden State being favored?
The public consuming all of this content, like what you guys are putting out and what Amico is putting out and the great guys over at Burning River, we're putting out all of this content and all of these people can consume it. And they might not buy that aspect of it, the whole disrespect, nobody believes in us card. I'm not buying it, but to be honest, that doesn't really matter, right? Whether we buy it or not, as the consuming public that's taking in this content constantly, doesn't matter. What matters is whether or not the guys in that locker room will buy that mentality. So I don't think that there's a lot to it in terms of pure basketball and X's and O's and being very pragmatic and practical in the way you approach analyzing the series. But if those 15 guys in the locker room feel like they're disrespected and that's going to help them, I'm 100% on board with that.
And one other part to that, and this comes from a good buddy of mine I play NBA 2K with. That's not the point of where I'm going with it, but we know the Cavs love wrestling. And basketball, even though it is a hardcore sport, it still is entertainment. And one of the points he made to me, shout out Pure Hustle, he said that, you know, I don't think the NBA, and this is a podcast for another day, why the NBA playoffs might not have been exciting and whatnot, but maybe the Cavs are tapping into that sports entertainment a la WWE part of it, trying to play that disrespect card. So maybe that's where they get that from. We know they got the T-shirts, Lord knows, and Kevin Love has the belt, but maybe that's where they get that aspect of that, and they want to play that angle up. So,
yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but you're right. They're sort of, you know, like you said, it is entertainment. I know, like you said, this is big boy sports, right? And the NBA is a business first and foremost, but part of business is entertainment when you're doing it in front of 20,562 people every single night. So if they're able to tap into that, like I said, whatever gets me an opportunity to buy another ring to put on my mantle is whatever they can have that. That's fine.
Jared, when you take a look at these Golden State Warriors right now, you know, each team is a little bit different over the trilogy as we see it. But what do you see as the challenges going into this third battle with the Cavaliers and the Golden State Warriors? What are the key matchups that you're looking at?
Well, I think the biggest thing with Golden State is, and this isn't revolutionary analysis here, it's just they're just terrifyingly good. They've got three guys that on any given night can beat you by themselves. So I'm a little concerned about that, and you sort of look at that, and like you said, you want to identify matchups, and I think there's a good chance that if the Cavs match up with positionality, I think that they'll get eaten alive, right? But I think that it's going to be important. I think you're going to see a lot of hiding Kyrie Irving, you know, over on someone that's in the game and who's not going to be super active, or you're going to see a lot of Golden State doing that, maybe putting Steph Curry on Shumpert or J.R. Smith to try to kind of hide them defensively. So I think beyond that, what you're really looking at is we know what Kevin Love is defensively, right? He's never been a dynamic defender, although he's had a much better year this year just in terms of being where he's supposed to be and making an effort once he's there. I think that if he can contain Draymond Green's role as the facilitator in that offense and sort of dare Draymond to shoot as opposed to allowing him to stand back and pick the defense apart with really great passes, that's going to be, I think, a key. And I think that's going to be a little bit overlooked here in the next week or so, or however many days it is now, as we go into that series, is can Kevin Love just be in the right place and make Draymond Green beat him by scoring as opposed to being a facilitator?
Yeah, I mean, obviously now we're looking at this and the guys like Durant and Steph and LeBron and Kevin are ultimately going to be responsible for the outcomes of this. But there are other variables, and one of the big variables for sure is the bench play of these two teams. You know, I thought the Indiana comeback when all the backups and LeBron were on the court gave them a lot of confidence and kind of changed the way I thought the playoffs were kind of going for this Cavaliers team, even defensively. What can you say about this bench? And when you look at Golden State's bench, is this an advantage for the Cavaliers?
I think in terms of pure personnel and depth, if you look at it on paper, I think it's a clear advantage for the Cavs. The problem there is Golden State's bench, while it might not be as talented or dynamic, they might not have that spurt ability, right, that we talked about. They are consistently good. They're consistently within their roles. Whereas the Cavs sort of, you know, I was talking to my buddy about it the other day, and I think what the Cavs really need is somebody from that bench group to each night, one of those guys. And it might be a different guy every night, might be the same guy every night, but every single night, every single game, one of those guys from the bench for the Cavs is going to have to come in and play at an extremely high level. Whereas sometimes you saw, you know, the Indiana comeback was great, but the bench was not super consistent. You know, I think the final margin of victory in that series was plus 16 in all four games. So you sort of saw the leads being relinquished and things like that. And you really can't afford that because Golden State's guys are going to come in, fill their roles, they're going to make shots, they're going to defend, and Golden State's coaching staff have made it easy for them to be successful because all they have to do is do the exact same thing every single time. They don't have, they're not freestyling out there. They're very regimented. And I think on paper, that's an advantage for the Cavs. If they can be consistent, their bench will far outperform, and that's going to be a big deal here.
Is there one player on the bench that you look at and say, that guy's got an advantage matchup-wise off the bench?
You got to consider Channing Frye in that role, as far as I'm concerned. And he'll have a one-on-one matchup advantage, whether he comes in and he's going against second-team guy like JaVale McGee, or if he comes in and he's, you know, matched up directly with Zaza, or even if he's matched up, you know, with Draymond Green. But coming off of that bench, though, for the Cavs, I think that's really going to be a big key for him to get consistent minutes. He's going to have to pull guys away from the rim and make shots so that he has his own gravity, right? You want people in his orbit so he can free up those lanes for other guys. In that way, I think he has an advantage. He's a better low post defender than people want to give him credit for, and he's a better passer in terms of moving the ball. And I think that not only in terms of one-on-one, like I said, depending on who he's matched up against, does he have an advantage, but within a team dynamic and a team concept and staying within your schemes, I think he could potentially be a very valuable weapon.
We're talking to Jared Donnelly of, well, now it's AmicoHoops.net. You know, talking about the bench and all that sort of stuff, there's the guy who's actually going to make the call who plays and when. Tyronn Lue has been there and has won a championship. On the other bench, might be Mike Brown, a guy very familiar to Cleveland Cavaliers fans. Have you heard anything on Steve Kerr and his chances of potentially being on the bench for the finals? And if not, is there an advantage for the Cavaliers, you think, with Mike Brown over on the other side?
I haven't heard anything other than what sort of everyone's heard at this point. I'm trying to kind of see what I can find out. But as of right now, it appears that everyone kind of knows the same thing, and that's that we don't know anything about Steve Kerr. which is great for people like us that do these sorts of things and want to have something good to tell the people that are consuming our content and things like that. But, you know, we don't have anything, so everyone's going to have to find out when we do. Here's the thing about Mike Brown. Like, he's kind of a nightmare sometimes, right? Like, you know that team is going to come out and defend because, one, that's in their makeup, and, two, he's going to make sure of it. You also know that Mike Brown doesn't adjust well, whether it be schematically, X's and O's stuff, or whether it be adhering. I don't know if you guys remember, but he has those stupid laminated sheets with minutes and charts, and it was his minutes sheets. And if his minutes, when he was in Cleveland, if his minutes sheets didn't tell him to do something, he didn't do it, right? And you're still seeing that with him. He won't vary too far away from exactly what he knows and what he's planned. So I do think the Cavs have the coaching advantage if, in fact, Steve Kerr is not on the bench for the Warriors. Fronlew is really good. He's just really good. His side-out-of-bounds stuff is phenomenal. His stuff ATO after timeouts is really, really incredible. And he does some things with rotations. It's a kind of question at first, but I'm done questioning Ty Lue. Every time someone does or doesn't play, or I think they play too long and they don't play enough, the Cavs beat the hell out of somebody by 35, and then they go win, and then they go play for a title.
What brings up a great question, even if Steve Kerr's there, do the Cavs and Tyronn Lue maybe have an advantage?
That is a great question. And I think at this point, what you have to do is, in order to answer that question, is you have to sort of remove everything else, right? If you have an average NBA team and you need to win one game, would you rather have Ty Lue coaching it or Steve Kerr coaching it? And I think I would rather have Ty. Just because, like I said, those things, his guys execute. He's extremely gifted. I think maybe other than Brad Stevens, I think he might be the most gifted in terms of drawing up those plays. We talked about ATO and side out and all those things, and really being able to motivate his guys and push the right buttons at the right time and all that. I think that's a great question, and one I hadn't thought of, honestly, until you just asked me. But I think I'd give the advantage to Ty Lue there in a vacuum.
I take David Black. I mean, he had the Warriors in the first series. I mean, this is a series. I'm just saying it a little tongue-in-cheek, but I mean, if it wasn't for whoever the video coordinator or whoever that guy was on the Golden State staff who woke Steve Kerr up in the middle of the night and said, why don't you start Iguodala, we could be talking about a three-peat, you know, not just the three Eastern Conference finals in a row, but three championships in a row. So, I mean, I don't want to give you – that's a spoiler alert for my prediction later. But nevertheless, you're saying
No, I mean, that's a great point, too, right? Because the Cavs didn't have two of their three best players and took that Golden State team to six games. And like you said, it wasn't until someone other than Steve Kerr figured out his rotations for him and his matchups that, you know, they obviously went on to win the title that year, unfortunately for us. But, no, I think that is a great point. And I want to be clear, I was never a David Blatt guy. I think Steve Kerr is a better coach than David Blatt. But that sort of speaks to how small and minute the details and the finer points really have to be when you have two teams that I think are so evenly matched, so incredibly talented.
I don't think it's about the adjustments on the court when it really comes to Kerr's presence versus Mike Brown for the Golden State Warriors. And me and Jake talked about this a lot last year and the round one, round two. But it really comes to keeping those guys under control. They're a very emotional team, and we know that the emotional leader is Draymond Green and where that can go if it goes sideways. But even with Game 6, we saw Steph Curry with the throwing of the mouthpiece and hitting, you know, one of the Cavs owner's sons with it. You know what I mean? Like, those guys they ride so high that it can fall off with anger and frustration real quick if things aren't going well in the system, like you talked about, that they're accustomed to.
There's an element of babysitting with that team, right? And same as there is with Cleveland, you know, as the head coach, you're sort of massaging egos and you're sort of, like you said, controlling that emotion and trying to keep guys on a level plane and push the right buttons to make them emotional and passionate and aggressive without, like you said, the brakes coming off and all of a sudden the train's off the tracks, whatever cliche you want to use, and all, and then it's a grease fire, you know, which is what happened to Golden State last year. But yeah, no, that's a really good point, and something that you don't talk about if you're not talking about how evenly matched two teams are in the finals, right? That kind of thing just doesn't come up otherwise. We're not so much worried about coaches making adjustments on the floor, because both coaches are going to do that and they'll probably be okay. But in terms of the psyche of the players, I think that's another advantage for Tom.
Yeah, the stats are so close with these teams. I mean, you're going to get all of that, you know, everywhere. Fast and furious at you from ESPN, everywhere that's going to be putting it out there. So you're going to see that. I mean, the Cavs are real close, whatever, you know, analytics you want to look at. But the other thing to this is I'm real concerned, and I think there's a lot of Cavs fans out there. We know Cavs Twitter is going to be going nuts about it. But when it comes to the officiating and the impact that can have, I mean, if Tony Brothers is going to, you know, be out there making a show about him, either at the Cavs' expense or even at the Warriors' expense, I mean, how do you see this series being officiated?
You know, that was one thing with me in the last couple of years. I didn't get the feeling that the officiating was as egregious as a lot of people did. Sometimes it really felt that way, but and during games, I don't look at box scores, right? Because I don't want them to tell me something that I don't already see, and I don't want to look for something and then create it because I, you know what I mean, because I saw it. So I think, and when I did look after games, most of the time the foul calls were relatively even. I think that in just like in any other series, the officials are going to reward the aggressor, right? And I think that in terms of roster composition, Cleveland is better suited to be the aggressor. Well, I mean by that is use the dribble to get to your spots, you know, set physical screens, pound the glass, go down into the post and get Kevin Love some touches early. If you can't, maybe get Draymond in foul trouble and see if he loses his mind, right? Like, but I don't think that that's going to be a thing that we'll talk about unless something insane happens.
The physical team's going to win this. I mean, that's where they had their most success against Golden State last year, was when Bogut went out and they were the more physical team. They were beating up Curry. He was whining and complaining and throwing his mouthpiece. And they've got the bigger bodies to do it. So I think they've got to go out there and they've got to lay it out that they are going to be the physical team. So for this finals, first of all, how do you see it playing out? And then who's the key player? Who's going to be walking away with the MVP when it's all said and done? And the city will have the title because of their play.
Well, I think on June 1, I think that Cleveland's going to steal that game in Golden State. They're playing too good. LeBron's too focused. And Golden State hasn't lost. And the law of averages states that at some point they have to, right? Like they're not going to go 16-0. So why can't game one be the game? So I think they win game one. I think they win the series in six. And the obvious pick for finals MVP, of course, is going to be 23. But I think if you want someone other than that, you point directly at Mr. Fourth Quarter, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think Kyrie Irving, we saw when he has those big games and LeBron has a big game, they're darn near unbeatable. So I think if to win it in six, yeah, he's going to almost have to be the MVP, I think, in my mind.
It's interesting because I think not unanimously, but I think overwhelmingly, if you asked, you know, general Cavs fans or general Warriors fans that same question, everyone would almost to a person say Kyrie. But we just watched Kevin Love average more than 25 and 13 and shoot over 50% from the field and three. So that's a thing too, right? And
yeah.
I think that when you look at it from that perspective, the Cavs have three players on their team that I think could easily win a finals MVP this year if the Cavs were to repeat. I think if Golden State's going to repeat, I think it's going to be because Kevin Durant goes crazy. And he's really the only person on that team that I can see 2 weeks from now going, you know what, they won that title because of Durant. We won't say they won that title because of Curry, or certainly not Klay Thompson or Draymond. I think the Cavs have three viable finals MVP candidates, and I don't see that on the other side.
Well, I'm real interested to get Jake's prediction here because we know his friends in Vegas that set the lines are dying for people to put the money on the Warriors. So, Jake, what are you thinking?
Well, I mean, I look at it, and you got the best player on the court on your team. I like the Cavs' chances with this. It's going to be definitely – to me, it's Durant as well. And I almost feel like Durant has more pressure on him than LeBron does at this point. LeBron won the title last year and brought it to Cleveland and did something that, if he never wins another one, will be remembered forever. I think if the Cavs can steal one in Golden State, all that pressure is coming back to Cleveland on Golden State's shoulders. I'll take the Cavs. I want them to win it at home this year. I think they make it a point to LeBron in six.
Yeah, let's be honest. I mean, I already gave mine away, but I'm going to say this is the way it happens. One, you're going to see Durant get in foul trouble, and it's not going to be so much them going directly at him. Durant's a great rebounder. He's done that since he was at Texas. I think a lot of people don't see that aspect of his game. It's been shown a lot with the Warriors. But they're not going to be able to rebound as Kevin Love is as effective as he has been during the playoffs. And also, too, Tristan Thompson. I mean, you saw the Celtics, you know, bringing three people to box Tristan out. And that's just so they could try to get a chance to get the ball. Golden State won't put that focus in because they want to run too much. Maybe that's an adjustment they make later on in the series, but if the Cavs are going to win, they're going to have to win early. So I agree with that assessment. They're going to have to come out and punch Golden State in the mouth almost the same way the Spurs had Golden State before, you know, Zha Zha went, you know, clear out on Kawhi Leonard's ankle. The other key to me is that foul trouble again, too, though, going at Steph. And Jared, one of the things that I know you wanted to mention, and I think they can get this in that 1-3 pick and roll, whether it's Kyrie and LeBron playing off of that, maybe even Kevin Love. But I think the big aspect, if the Cavs are going to be successful, you can't play the Golden State Warriors a la full strength. You got to get one of those guys off the floor in foul trouble. So then you're playing with somebody, if it's David West coming off that bench, Patrick McCaw, Sean Livingston, you bring one of those guys in, then they can focus down on the other guys, and the Cavs defense, although struggled a little bit, can be more effective.
You hear it a lot, right? Oh, the Cavs want to target Steph Curry, or the Warriors are going to target Channing Frye or Kevin Love in pick and rolls. And really, basically, all I mean by that, why I think it's important, is because they're not going to start Steph Curry on Kyrie Irving. They can't. Kyrie will eat him alive before the end of the quarter. So they'll hide him on J.R. Smith probably. So what you do is you run some pick-and-roll action or some things off the ball, stagger some screens around, and make an effort to get it to where Steph Curry is guarding Kyrie Irving. And that does two things, right? That creates a mismatch elsewhere on the floor, probably in terms of size. It gets their best defender off of Kyrie Irving. And Kyrie's big. People don't think about it, but he's a legit 6'4", 195. And Steph Curry, as we know, is not. So that's going to get him in foul trouble, too. You know, so they're going to do a lot of switching around and do some really creative stuff. And I'm really excited to see actually what they do. I'm hoping to, shortly after the game, do some diagramming and go back and look and hopefully get that posted, you know, relatively shortly. But they're gonna make Golden State switch everything, and the Cavs are gonna switch everything. So, whoever starts off the game guarding somebody, they might not be there the whole time, and that's a function of physical talent mismatches, physical size mismatches, and trying to create that element of foul trouble, like you very astutely mentioned.
That's the biggest key, because if they're not playing with the four or the five, I mean, we saw the way that impacts them, and it'll impact them on both ends. It's not just, you know, on offense, then they get to that bad stretch. When Golden State loses, it's not so much that they're missing, they take bad shots. You know, when they're moving the ball, they get wide open shots. That's their style of play. That's why they shoot such a high percentage, because Steph Curry ends up wide open in the bottom corner, which that's a smaller shot than him shooting up from half court. So that's when you're like, wow, okay, Steph Curry's getting his game going, but that's because somebody lost him. And so you that's the one thing you worry about with the Cavs, making sure that they stay with him. But I think, like we all been saying, and all the pundits and whatnot, hopefully the Cavs are uber-focused so that they're not losing anybody when it comes to those scramble possessions. And like I said, TT's getting those 50-50 balls. I mean, Kardashian or not, this guy's been playing at a high level, even getting a black eye. So, man, I like the Cavs. I actually like the Cavs in five. I think they got to come out and blitz these guys and take it away from them fast and furious and finish them early. Because if it goes seven, I do not like the series going long with the Cavs. I worry about the fatigue factor.
If it goes seven and everything holds chalk, right, where home teams win games and that forces it to game seven, I don't like it. I don't want to have to live through another game seven in their building. Like, I can't. I don't, like, I physically and mentally, I'm not built for that. Like, there's no way. And I don't think the Cavs are either. You know,
it's too stressful to talk about right now, Jared. We don't have to go there. It's too stressful.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. time, he neglected to speak to the media today, speaking of LeBron. So he decided he wasn't going to do that. And I mean, that's him being focused and sending a message to his guys. And he leaps in mysterious ways. One other thing you mentioned, too, Tristan Thompson, and why I think Kevin Durant is their most viable Finals MVP candidate, because I think that there are going to be times where the Cavs will need to have Tristan on Durant. Not necessarily in switchouts, not necessarily in help defense or rotation, but genuinely Golden State will come down the floor and Tristan will match up one-on-one against Kevin Durant. That does a couple of things for Golden State. It gets Tristan away from the rim, right, first and foremost, which is a win for them. But for the Cavs, it also gets their best large defender in space on their best large scorer in space. And Tristan cannot stop Kevin Durant. That's not what I'm trying to get at. But he does provide an opportunity to make Durant uncomfortable, to make Durant maybe start to force some shots or force the issue, throw some bad passes, you know, and then you're talking about the shot selection you mentioned. Then you're talking about frustration. Then you're talking about fouls away from the basket by them. And it all comes back to them playing at full strength. And in a lot of ways, them playing physically at full strength will begin and end with them playing mentally at full strength.
When it comes to Kevin Durant, too, one thing I would like to see from the Cavs, I don't know if they'll make this adjustment, but when they go, they play some lineups with Love at center and then Tristan at center with LeBron at the four. I want to see them pick Kevin Durant up at half court the way that they pick Steph Curry up at half court, only because when he gets his long strides, he's more dangerous once he gets to that three-point line and then that foul line extended to already be into a move or a jump shot or a mid-range. That's just me looking at it. I just think that's the way you slow down their progress, because if he is rebounding well, he gets that rebound and goes coast to coast, then you're looking at the Cavs on their heels in the worst part of their – you talked about those bad habits and being some parts of the Cavs game being exposed. Their transition defense is the one thing that, you know, will be stressed out about as we watch this series, because we know how good Golden State can be in the open floor.
I 100% agree with you, and you're right, right, about picking Durant up there and initiating that defensive stand early with him. The one difference between doing that with him and doing that with Steph is Durant is so tall. If you pick him up early, he can still make the pass to one side of the floor or the other, and he can make a lot of passes and a lot of angles that Steph Curry can't, because he just simply is not large enough to do it. That said, you're right.
But he's the one guy. He's the one guy that's going to try to take it all the way to the basket. A lot of times, Steph and Clay and those guys, they're setting up for a three. So I know it's the pick your poison type of thing.
Sure.
But I would rather have those guys shooting a three with somebody flying out to chase them off the line, hopefully, than Durant being able to three stride it straight to the basket from half court, if that makes sense.
It eliminates a little bit of that trailer action for three. Right. Yeah. So if you have somebody picking Durant up at half court, that's going to naturally sort of slow down a little bit of everybody, give your defense a chance to recover. And we see so many times Golden State getting fast break three-pointers, not necessarily off of one guy spotting up, you know, without numbers, but also one guy pushes the issue, the defense is back as a result, and then next thing you know, you've got Klay Thompson walking into a 26-footer with no one near him in that sort of secondary or tertiary break. So I think you're right. That's the way to do that. You get him out at half court. You sort of naturally slow that down even a little bit, get your guys a chance to get themselves back and set and initiate the rest of the defense at that three-point line, so you're not giving up that trailer three.
We made some jokes about some of the Cavs post-game press conferences, but I will say this, and this is the one thing that has me very, very hopeful and feeling real good about the Cavs and whatever games they win, but definitely winning this championship, is the honesty. We saw that from Kyrie after game four, maybe not so much with LeBron James getting after it with people from Hyrum. And just on a personal note, Hyrum has a great basketball history. I don't know about that clown who was heckling LeBron, but my high school, you know, current high school basketball coach at my alma mater was the all-time point scoring leader there. So shout out Coach Young of the Mighty Shaker Heights Red Raiders. And this guy proved it to me, because I was talking trash about Hyrum a long time ago when he first came on, and he started hitting threes from half court. So they produced some ballers out there. But nevertheless, the honesty that the Cavs have shown, even if it's LeBron reflecting on his own legacy, Kyrie reflecting on the role that he's played there, I mean, Kevin Love laughing with the inside. And I know it's easy when you roll somebody by 30 to laugh and joke about your performance, but I think they are actually comfortable as a team. They don't have the pressure of doing it for the first time for Cleveland. All the momentum is looking at Kevin Durant and those guys. You know, Stephen A. is trying to put all this pressure on them, all these talking heads and whatnot. But I really think the Cavs can be secure. Even if they don't finish it out, they're going to do it on their own terms, and I think that's going to be a great thing to watch.
Agreed, and that's one of the nice things, too, about all this rest, right, in between series, is that, yeah, it's good physically, but also during the season with all the new guys in and out and injuries and guys in and out, they didn't really have that time. And four games in five nights, how many times in the last 2 months of the season? So they didn't really have time to have that sort of bonding and remember that they like each other and sort of build that chemistry that took them so far to the title last year. But having 8 or 9 days with no ball and just practice and their cardio days that they do on those climbers, that sort of is a nice opportunity for them to sort of rebond a little bit and continue to get guys acclimated and continue to remember, oh, yeah, I like this guy. I'm going to have his back on help defense now. And I think that's really big. And like you said, the Cavs are playing with no pressure. This is the first time in his career LeBron's playing a season with no pressure, and it's the most efficient season of his life, I believe.
Thanks so much, man. Appreciate you dropping the knowledge on us. Enjoy the ride for sure. I mean, we're living in a great time to be a Cleveland fan. So thanks again for coming on.
Absolutely. Yeah, no problem at all. Thanks so much for having me. I had a blast with you guys. And keep up the good work over there. And throw some people my way over at Good Ball Hunting, and we'll talk ball all the time.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Jared.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
You can hear more of things like this on With an Ohio Bias. Be checking us out, withanohiobias.com. You can find us on iTunes, the full podcast on iTunes. Just search With an Ohio Bias. Give us a like, subscribe, and write us a review even. And we would really appreciate that. Thanks for listening.